Blog Talk Radio.
John L. Brown, author and filmmaker, native of Lake Charles, Louisiana, is taking his expose on race relations in America, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, to another level by doing a documentary entitled The Mentally Blind in America. The documentary will open the viewer's eyes to homelessness, poverty, hunger, the real rules of the criminal justice system, and other poverty-related issues that challenge underemployed, unemployed, and homeless people in American post-recession. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary, will enlighten people of color and people in poverty on how to restore their credit rating and expunge their criminal records. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary coming this fall. Real people, real stories. The Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, a documentary on race, poverty, the recession's aftermath, and more. Follow our post on Facebook's The Mentally Blind in America. The Mentally Blind in America.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I'll tell you, we have a special guest for you guys today. And this guy here is doing so much great work into the communities. And I'm really proud of this young man because he is really taking it to another level about uplifting your communities. He really is. But before I go any further, I'm going to ask Ms. J if she don't mind taking the pleasure of bringing our special guest on for you guys.
Absolutely. I am very excited to have Mr. James Big Dog Tate join us today. He's a father, he's a minister, he's an author. And what I loved about James is that he took a subject that we don't really want to deal with and turned it into something really fun. And I don't know, it was really fun. I read the book, so I don't know. I'm trying to get the right words. It was fun. It was educational. And it was information that we needed, and it wasn't written in a way that we couldn't process it, even as adults. It made me think as an adult. But before I go on about James's book, James, before we get started, please tell the audience a little bit about you, because I gave a little bit, but tell them a little bit more about you.
Well, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I'm in the D.C. area, so it's almost evening over here. But my name is James Tate. I'm born and raised in Washington, D.C., and I was a overweight child, overweight teenager, and an overweight adult. And so obesity is something that I dealt with pretty much most of my life. And in 2007, I was involved in an accident that left me immobile for a year, and it took 3 years of physical therapy to rehab from. And in that year of immobility, my weight went up to well over 400 pounds. And my doctor told me that my injuries would never heal if I don't lose weight. And so I was kind of discouraged because I've never been small. And my brother had invited me back to church. He said, "Why don't you come back to church with me?" And so, you know, my back was against the wall. I didn't have anywhere else to go. So I said, "Sure, I'll go back." And that year was 2010. I went to New Year's Eve service going into the year 2010. And the theme for that church year was, God can do exceedingly abundantly above all you can ask or think. So I prayed for weight loss, which sounds kind of weird, but I prayed for weight loss. And I went into the church bookstore, and there was one book on the shelf. And I attend a mega church, and so it's a huge bookstore, but there was only one book on the shelf that I went to, and that book was titled What Would Jesus Eat? And so I grabbed that book, and it pretty much had every scripture in the Bible about how to take care of your body and how to eat properly. So I read that. I applied it to my life and changed my lifestyle. And at the end of 2010, I had lost over 200 pounds naturally, and I've been able to keep it off. So, I mean, it's been a blessing, and I've been blessed to go to nutrition school, and I currently have 6 nutrition certifications. And I have my own wellness practice where I help people to lose fat in every area of their life, mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical.
That is an awesome testimony. And I think that's why your book it felt like natural, because it was a real story, right? It was something that you experienced. And I know that you work a lot with adults, But what made you tackle the children? Because we know that we do have a problem, but a lot of people ignore it. What made you take on that challenge?
Well, the funny thing is that everyone told me that I should put my story into a book. So I started to write a devotional for adults at first, and it just wouldn't flow properly. And I was praying and asking God, you know, why doesn't this flow? What do you want me to do? And the funny thing is he told me to go to the bookstore and see how many health and wellness and nutrition books there are for Christians. And so aimed at adults. And so I went to the bookstore, and there were a bunch of them. I was surprised. There were a ton of them. And there were a lot written by African-American authors. And so then he said, now look and see how many health and wellness books there are aimed at children. And there were none at all in the bookstore. And so he told me that he wanted me to write for children. And also, I've been blessed to speak in the different school systems in my area. I spoke and dealt and worked with kids in D.C. public schools and their parents, as well as Prince George's County, which is a county here in Maryland. And work with the children. And it's funny that when you tell a child something about health and wellness, it sticks automatically. And so the children will run home and tell their parents. And I had parents calling me, asking me, what did you tell my child? Because they want to throw away all the snacks and so things like that. But when I would speak to adults, it took a while for them to get it. And so I said, okay, why don't I go through the children to impact what's going on in the home and the community? Because the children take it, they run with it. And they actually influence the groceries that the parents purchase anyway. So why not go through the children? So that's the reason why I aimed the book and this particular series, children, and eventually it will go to the parents as well so that we can get the families healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, someone had asked me for the show, so I just want to let you know the book will be available in September. We're talking about it now so that you get an idea of what you're going to get from this book. It's really a great book, and you made a valid point. A lot of times we have to go through the kids to reach the parents, you know. So, I mean, that was a valid point. And I think sometimes as adults we're set in our ways. So when someone comes, especially as you get older, because I know me, I got a health coach now, and I'll be like, no. She'd be like, yeah. You know, because I'm set in my way. I want to do it my way. And so, you know,
exactly.
Get set in our way, and she goes, well, does your way work? And I go, oops. So you know, sometimes we have to be brought all the way down to be rebuilt back up. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
I get that point. You're going through the kids because they're going to say, Mom, you're not supposed to eat that. And after a while, you're going to like, boy, you get out of my face. But they're going to, after a while, they're going to start thinking. They're going to start thinking, I shouldn't be eating this either. So, I mean, I think that's really a valid point, really a great point.
Right. And September is actually National Childhood Obesity Awareness Month.
And so
the funny thing, the thing that I find odd is that if you go into the inner cities and into the communities, it's rare that you actually find a program or an event that takes place in the month of September to address this issue and actually what they're labeling as an epidemic, because they said that this is the first generation of children that will not outlive their parents due to childhood obesity and diseases related to childhood obesity. But there are no programs. And so that was alarming to me. And so I said, okay, let me release this book in September and try to get buzz going around my community and other surrounding communities, and hopefully around the entire country, about childhood obesity, and not just use September to promote awareness, but let's get the ball rolling so that we can keep this going year round.
Yeah, I think Michelle Obama was trying that as well. You know, talking about eating better, and you know, when she was in the office, eating better, had the kids outside exercising, getting away from the TV. You know, and the computers and the laptops and the cell phones, you know, kids going back to almost like, I'm not saying they're not kids, but going back to where you're playing outside and you're coming in smelling like a puppy. I mean, kids don't even play like that.
Right. And you have schools that don't even have gym anymore.
That's right. No more gym time. That's right.
No PE. And so, it's to take our communities back. I mean, we put a lot on the school system and teachers. to raise the children. It's up to us as parents and guardians and community members to actually take back and make sure that our kids are healthy and don't just leave it into the teacher's hands at school. We have a job to do, and it's very, very important.
Absolutely.
That's right. You know, James, let me ask you a question. Now, I know that your book is about weight loss and wellness, you know, teaching the kids how to eat right and things of that nature, exercising. But, you know, like there's a lot of obese kids inside the school system these days. And in your book, and what do you talk about? Do you talk about, of them not teasing the children? Because, you know, like kids are cruel. They will tell another kid, oh, he's fat. Oh, you fat. Get out of here. Or, you know what I'm saying? You know, do you talk about that in your book?
Well, in the book, I don't cover teasing in this particular volume of the series. The reason being is because when I was in school, there was probably one or two fat kids in the school. Now, I use the term fat, quote unquote, but there were one or two fat kids in the school. Whereas now, if you go into a school, if you see a skinny kid, that kid is being teased. Because
right.
No one is skinny in school. And so what I wanted to do is I'll focus on bullying and other series because they're different giants, and we'll talk about the book as far as the giants go. But my main objective and my main goal was for people to see obesity, what it really is. It's a giant. It's a monster. It's something that has come into our land that we need to actually evict from our land and from our lives. And we've become very comfortable with certain giants living where we live. And so
right.
I tell people that, you know, when I would talk to adults, I would use an analogy and say, okay, imagine if you came into the home and you saw your loved ones, your spouse, your children, or your parents, and you walked in and you saw an intruder in your home attacking your loved one. What would you do? And all the adults would say, oh, I would jump right on them. I would defend my family. I would protect my family by any means necessary. I would do what I have to do. Now, I asked them, why is it that when you walk into the house and you see obesity and diabetes and heart disease and high blood pressure attacking your loved ones, you just walk by them and act like it's not happening? It's something that we really have to take control of, and we really, really have to evict these giants from our land. So my main objective was to show people what obesity really is and so that we're not comfortable with it living where we live.
Wow.
Yeah.
You couldn't put it no better. You couldn't put it no better. I mean, that was powerful what you said. And it's so true. You know, that's the thing. It's very true, man. I mean, you walk, you know, people have diabetes or whatever they may have. You will walk up in there and won't say nothing, won't even help them, won't even look on a computer and see what we can do to help them, you know. You're right.
Downplay it as well because people, you know, they give diabetes cute names like, oh, I just got a touch of sugar. No, I mean, it's, even in the game of tag, if you get touched, you're it. I mean, that's just what it is. It's not a touch of sugar. You have it.
You
and
got
we
sugar.
Have to get rid of it.
Touching no sugar.
right.
That's really true. I mean, that's really funny because I got people in my family, and they say, I just got a little sugar. And I'll be like, but you on five pills. You got a lot of sugar. You know,
right.
Funny. It's really funny.
What you say, James? They just give them a little sweet name.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, one of the things I liked about the book was when the monster obesity was talking. He said, "You do not realize who I am. I'm obesity." You know,
right.
And like, you know, you don't know who I am. You know, acknowledge me, and then bring me three more kids. So it's really funny because that's just kind of like how the disease works. You keep ignoring me, and I'm going to keep collecting y'all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I, the way that I wrote it, I mean, I wrote it so, you know, a child can read it, but also when an adult reads it, they'll be able to see things that the children may not recognize at this point in time. Because just like you said, you know, obesity is like, do you not realize who I am? I destroy lives and lands near and far, and you're only going to send three children up against me. But it's similar to the, you know, the story of David and Goliath, where it took a child to defeat the giant that the adults didn't want to face themselves. And so right now we have giants like obesity, like diabetes, that adults do not want to face. So why not have create some children that will face it and hopefully motivate their loved ones to do the same?
Absolutely. And then, yeah. You know, just having three kids, though, up against this big giant. And, you know, you're looking at, you have another section where I think a young man's looking out the window eating, and he looked kind of sad. I'm like, oh, but it's like, our kids don't move. Like, we don't get up. They got to get up, you know. And we as parents have really become, and I'm a parent, so I can say that, sometimes complacent. I remember with my son, I kept saying, you got to do sports. You got to do sports. Because I was so afraid, not as much as about no obesity, because I wasn't even thinking about the time, but I was just thinking about just being active.
Right, right. I mean, activity is so important, and that's something that's lacking. I mean, it's lacking in our communities. It's lacking in our homes. We become lethargic. We become lazy. We're being raised by the TV. Parents let the TV raise the children. And the thing is that all you have to do, you'll be surprised that kids want to run around. They want to run around. They want to have fun. But we are the ones who keep them locked in, because the parents, we have so much to do. But the thing is that, And I saw, and I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but there's a food pyramid. If someone Googles the African-American food pyramid, there was a food pyramid created just for African-Americans, similar to the food pyramid that the government uses on how to feed your family. And if you look at the foundation of that pyramid, the foundation is family time, community, and exercise. Spending time with your family is the foundation. And we know that if you have a weak foundation, nothing can stand on a weak foundation. So when we have that foundation of that pyramid, which is family time and activity with the family and the community, that's something that we can build on for a generation. And so when we start building that foundation of getting our families together and not being in separate rooms and separate parts of the house and doing things that are fun, which is physical activity, and involving kids in the cooking of the food. And that's another thing, because when I was growing up, fast food was a treat. I mean, it's something you may get on a Friday.
Yeah,
but now kids are getting it. Yeah, kids are getting it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day. And now a home-cooked meal is a treat because it's your birthday and somebody's going to make your favorite mac and cheese or something like that. But the thing is that we really have to get back to community, to family, knowing your neighbor's names. I mean, you'll be surprised how many people live in the neighborhood and don't even know their neighbors. I mean, you get in there, get that going, and get that foundation. We have to rebuild that foundation, and then we can get the community and our families active again and bring a lot of love back into our communities. Because, I mean, the thing is, I always tell people, good health is much more than just eating right and exercise. It's a lot to it. And so, you know, when the community is healthy, when our homes and our neighbors' homes are healthy, we're healthy. And so that's something that we really have to get back to.
Yeah. And I think if we're more healthier as a whole, I think we as a community would do better. I mean, you know, when you're tired, sluggish, you know, you go to work all day. And I know I used to be a single mom. You go to work, you come home, I do not feel like doing no homework. And you got to do homework. You know what I mean? So, you
right.
know, if our diets are better, it gives us more energy to do the things we have to do. I think we won't be as tired as moms and dads and things like that. And you're correct. We need to work on that disconnect within our families, because it used to be a time where, like, I think me and John or John or I mentioned last week, we used to sit down and have dinner. When you had dinner at the dinner, you couldn't be on the phone. There was no TV.
Right.
Everybody, that's how my house was. My dad was like, I only get an hour a day with you. You know, can I just have dinner? And that was the rule. So we gave him dinner, you know. And after dinner, we ran outside as fast as we could, but we gave them that time. But it did make a difference, because it gave us a foundation of respect and, you know, family and, you know, being able to talk. Even today we have good communication, I think, between us is because we were, not, I shouldn't say forced, but it was taught to us to sit down and have conversation.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's right. You're right, Ms. J. These days now, they don't even, very few families have Sunday dinner. You know, they'll cook on Sundays. They'll go ahead on and make their kids plate and send them in their room and watch TV.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And my parents go to the room and eat their food. You know, and we have to get back down to family the way it was, because that's one of the reasons why our communities is weakened. And it's real. It is weakened. No, but anyway, you are those that just tuned in, you're listening in at Uplifting Community Talk Show, and we have our special guest is Mr. James Tate, and I mean, this guy here is really doing a lot of positive work in the communities. So if you guys want to ask a question or elaborate on something, please press 1. Okay, you can go ahead on, Ms. J.
Oh, not a problem. I do have a question. Now, because you are, I know you specialize a lot with a lot of adults, do you also get children as clients as well? And how does that work when you get a child as a client, if you've had
one? Oh, yes. So I work with children as well. And so the way that works is that I always involve the parent in the sessions that I work with children. You'll be surprised that when I speak to children, and you speak to them by themselves, you know, you include the parents in some sections, but then you speak to the child, because some children aren't going to be completely honest with their parent right there. And so
right.
You speak to the child, and I deal with a lot of, I've spoken and worked with a lot of obese children, but not just obese children. I mean, just anything that deals with health and wellness, but you'll be surprised that, you know, majority of the obese children that I talk to, the problem is not the food. I mean, we do have a food problem, but you have some children, especially our beautiful young ladies, you know, they go through so much. And I had one client who was actually abused growing up. And so with her mentality, she told me that I figured that if I ate and it became as big as I can, then I'll be strong enough to fight back. And I mean, to hear things like that, and so when people see an obese child, the first thing that they say is, oh, you need to stop eating snacks or stop eating chips or stop eating that. Where, I mean, the thing that you really have to get to the root cause of the issues. And so, you know, In our community and in a lot of places, we put a lot of Band-Aids on things. And so we really have to get to the root cause of why, what is really, really going on with this person. And when you get to the root cause, you'll actually uncover a lot of things. And so you'll be able to treat that person in another way rather than just saying eat salads and stop eating fried chicken. No, you really have to get to the root cause, and then that will show you that this person is lacking something else, lacking love, lacking respect, or they don't have a voice in their home or in their school or things like that. And so children, I work with complete families. I do kitchen renovations where we go through the cabinets and the cupboards and teach them how to read labels and what ingredients to stay away from. And so I try to make it fun, too, because, you know, when it comes to health and wellness, most people don't want to hear it because they feel like you're either judging them or they feel like that they have an issue or a problem. So I try to make it fun. And most people, majority of them, they love it.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing, James, most people these days, especially in the African-American communities, they're turning into vegetarians, you know, to lose weight.
Right.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, myself, I follow the plant-based diet. I'm a vegan myself. I've been vegan a little over 2 years now. And all that is that's the original dietary instruction that God gave us in Genesis 1:29, where he says that I've given you every green herb, every vegetable, every fruit that yields seed, that shall be your food. And that was the original diet, and that is still the best diet that we can have. I mean, it's proven that diet lowers blood pressure, reverses sickness, illness, and disease, and that's the original one that God gave us. The thing is that when he says that he's given us everything with seed, it's kind of hard to find seeded fruits and seeded vegetables nowadays because everything is seedless for some reason. But put the seeded version versus the seedless version, you'll see that the seeded version has more vitamins, minerals than the seedless. And so that just shows that, you know, God's word is still true from Genesis, from the first book, all the way to 2017.
You know, I respect vegans. I don't do red meat, or I don't mess around with pork, but I got to have some chicken. And I do my vegetables. I'm a big vegetable and fruit chick, got it down. But for me, and when you really think about it, I mean, giving up one more meat would really probably not be a big old deal, but that's just my mindset at this particular time in my life. I got to have something. If I'm giving up this, I got to have something to replace that. You know, I have not found any vegan food that really made me go, okay, I'm never going to eat meat again. I personally have not found a dish like that. So,
There are a lot of them. You'll be surprised.
I bless y'all.
And
I got you.
James, and on what the dishes are.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on what there are a lot of dishes that are out here that you can actually make yourself that you won't even miss the meat in that particular dish. The thing is that it starts in the mind. You know, health, wellness, weight loss, it all starts in the mind. And so a lot of us defeat ourselves by telling ourselves, hey, I need this, I can't live without this, I can't live without that. And so it all starts in the mind because we already go into it with a defeatist attitude, like this is not going to work, it's not going to help me, I'm going to miss this. But see, the thing is, if you actually write down every meat that you know, you'll probably name about five, maybe six.
right?
Yeah. But if you were to write down every fruit and vegetable, nut and seed, I mean, you'll have to flip the page over and continue writing. I mean, we have such a variety out here. The thing is that we're so boxed in. And so people would usually ask me, you know, I mean, you don't get tired of fruits and vegetables? I mean, you don't get tired of it? I'm like, well, you don't get tired of chicken? How many ways are you going to prepare that chicken? You eat fried chicken every day.
Now, I got 20 minutes of chicken, though.
Yeah. I mean, we do. But see, the thing is that majority of the people that I deal with aren't cooking. So it's either Chick-fil-A or it's Popeyes or it's KFC or it's something else. Yes, those are different fried chickens, but it's the same thing. Whereas I can have a vegetable dish one day, a vegetable, and not have the same vegetable in 2 weeks. So, I mean, I just know what the power of the fruits and vegetables did for me when I went through my weight loss and my journey, because I wasn't vegan when I went through my weight loss. I was pescatarian. So that is seafood only, but I cut out shellfish. So I just did fish as my source of protein. And so if I ate mostly vegetables and fish two to three times a week, and I was, you know, blessed to lose and keep off over 200 pounds, I mean, there's a lot of power in the fruits and the vegetables, the nuts and the seeds. So I would tell people, even if they're hesitant about going that route, just do the 80-20 rule. You know, eat your fruits and vegetables during the week, and then one day on the weekend, if you want to have your meat, go at it. And you'll notice how much better you feel once your diet is mostly fruits and vegetables.
Yeah,
James, I think most people don't know how to prepare a vegetarian dish.
You're right. The funny thing with that is most people don't know how to prepare meat dish either. They overcook it. They undercook it. They don't. I mean, they put so much seasoning on it. You'll be surprised. There's a lot of people who aren't preparing meat properly. But that's another thing. And so that's another thing that I'm that, you know, I've partnered with other people to bring to the community is cooking courses and how to prepare foods and how to shop for your groceries and how to store your food, because most people don't even know how to store their food, and they say, I don't buy this because it goes bad. Well, if your food can go bad, it's good for you. But if your food can't go bad, it's bad for you. So you really want your food to go bad. So don't be mad when you buy something and it spoils. You should be mad when you have those snacks that last 2 or 3 years and they still look the same. So we have to get back to sowing and teaching and educating people, you know, the proper way to purchase food, how to store food, how to prepare the food, how to cook the food, and then how the proper portions to serve the food. And so once we learn how to get back to that, and then our health goes up, I mean, our community is going to be beautiful, you know, just like it always has been and how it is now. I mean, it just needs a little fine-tuning. But once we get back to that, man, there's no telling what we can do and what we will be.
That's true.
Well, that is true. You're 100% right. You are 100% right. I was fixing to ask you a question about tell the audience about, you know, what you're doing, how is that uplifting the communities? But, hey, you already told them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have a, it's a very, very, I won't say it's an easy job. It's a very, very difficult job, but I'm really up for the challenge. I mean, I have a really great team with me, a great circle. But which I call my village, and we actually go out in the communities together, and we collaborate on a lot of things. And, you know, we're met with a lot of resistance. Believe it or not, we're met with more resistance when you try to go into the black churches and teach them about healthy eating, because you know that,
at the church, we get down. You know how
they do. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And they like, man, I'm not giving up my food.
Rings, man, don't be trying to mess with the church food.
Yeah,
after church.
You get met with so much resistance at the church, and it's funny because the comedian Chris Rock said something that is so profound. He said the black church is the only place where they will have a funeral and then turn around and serve the food that killed that person. So, I mean, it's just, when we go into the communities, you know, people, like you said, Ms. J, people are so set in their ways. But they're like, no, I'm not going to change it. I have a good life. I don't need to eat this stuff. I've been fine eating that. But the thing is that educating people from teaching it a different way, because so many people come into our community so abrasive and say, oh, if you don't eat this, you're going to die if you don't do this. But
the thing
is that I like to do is I like to try to – I use analogies and I try to paint pictures with words. So I would tell somebody, you have to look at food as fuel. For example, and then I will ask somebody, okay, what type of car do you have? And a lot of people, you know, in our communities, we got some fly cars, so people will have the $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 vehicle. And so I will ask them, what type of fuel do you put in that vehicle? And they will say, oh, I put the best of the best. I put 93 octane in my car.
Yeah,
I'm like,
doing
okay,
that.
Did you have premium 93 octane food in your body today? And they were like, no. And I'm like, well, do you realize that the average human body is valued at $45 million? So if you were willing to put 93-octane fuel in your $40,000 car, why are you putting regular in your multimillion-dollar machine? And just like that car, if you put that low-grade fuel in your car, that car is not going to perform the way it was designed to perform. And it's the same thing with our body. We put that regular fuel in our body, we become sluggish, we don't move right, we don't feel right, and it's the same way. So when I try to teach it, say, for example, using that, people are like, I never looked at it that way.
Me
and they're
either.
More receptive
fine
to hearing whatever else I have to say.
Yeah, that one got me. But I'm still eating chicken until I figure it out. But yeah, that does make sense, because I'm like a big herb person. I got every herb under the world in my room because I love herbs. So it's funny. I'll take all the herbs and all the right vitamins. I just don't want to give up that one thing yet.
Okay, and the key word was yet. And the thing is that you can have your chicken, but you don't have to deep fry your chicken. right? There are different ways. There are different ways to prepare it to make it healthier. And so that's the thing, to show people that, hey, there's a healthier way to have what you're having, even if you're having vegetables. There's a healthier way to prepare the vegetables that you're used to eating. And so it's a step-by-step process. Nobody gets there, you know, overnight. It's a slow walk. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint, because we plan to have, and I hope we have our bodies for 80, 90, 100 years. And so we have to take it day by day, you know, one meal at a time, one workout at a time. And that's the way to look at it. We just have to take it one day at a time. And when we can do that, you just make your next meal your best meal, and then your body will, you'll notice your body changing. You know that you have a lot of energy and you feel good. And nobody, there's no better feeling than health. When you, when your body is healthy and running at an optimum level, that's something that you wish you could bottle up and give to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, sell it.
Yeah.
No, really.
You know, Paulson, it was something you said, and I've been thinking about it while you was talking, and this was an eye-opener for me, and I hope it is for a lot of people that's listening in right now, is that at a funeral, sometime, you know, when a person died, right after the funeral, they served the same thing that killed that person.
Right.
You know, like salt.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
That's powerful, man. That is very, very powerful. And it's a true statement.
It is, John. And, you know, it makes me think about that movie, Lackawanna Blues, and she had a heart attack, and she came home. They had they had a feast. And I was thinking, dang, she just had a heart attack. But them greens look good.
Right.
That cake looked good. But it was funny. That's exactly what they served her. Everything that put her in the hospital, they had it for her homecoming.
Exactly. And see, that's the thing. It's the way that we look at food, because you think about food, especially in our communities. You know, we eat when we're happy. We eat when we're sad. We prepare feasts when we're celebrating. We prepare feasts when we're mourning. And so the thing is we have to actually look at food for what it is. It's actually fuel. And so we don't abuse that fuel. I mean, if you try to put gas in your car and you try to fill it up after it clicks on, it's going to spit it back out.
Hmm.
And that's the same thing with a baby. If you give a baby milk and that baby's done, it's going to spit the milk out, and you cannot put that nipple back in that baby's mouth. But somewhere after being a baby, we lost that. You know, growing up and you're feeding your child, and you're forcing your child to eat even when the child is full, and you tell your baby, hey, there's starving children in Africa, so you better eat all that food. But how is making them fat going to help them over there? I mean, develop a relationship with food, and we have to actually, you know, step back, look at food for what it is, and reengage it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really true. You made some really valid points. And to all my vegan friends that I've been clowning, I apologize. I've been
hey, it's all good. They love you. They still love you.
They love me. I eat my chicken while they eat they veggies, and we all good.
Yeah.
But, you know, you made some really valid points, because it is how we look at things. And it's also about us. It's a control issue, especially as far as adults. You know, babies, they don't have that much control, but as adults, I think it's us having some type of control over our life. And food is it.
You're right. You're definitely right. You're definitely right. I mean, because for a lot of people have different relationships with food, especially my sisters. You know, my sisters, I always have to remind them that, you know, food is not your boo. Because a lot of people. A lot of my sisters look at it that way, because food never talks about you, and never talks bad about you, and never calls you ugly or calls you fat or anything like that. And so when they have an issue of the heart, when their heart is empty or their heart is broken or they're missing something, a lot of them go to food. But the thing is, food is designed to fill the stomach. It doesn't fill the emptiness in your heart. And so that's where you really have to, you know, reestablish that relationship with food for what it is. And so, you know, with the book, And with the series of books in the series of the Cool Kids, I'm gonna talk about all of those things and teach the children about those things so that they can in turn teach the parents. And so then when the children get it and the parents get it, then we all can be healthy and then our community can thrive.
That's such a great point.
Absolutely. I mean, so much of a great point. And you know, Ms. J and I, we've had a lot of organization been on this talk show. Because as you know, we've been on air for over 2 years now. And you're the first one, I hate to say it, but you're the first one that came on this talk show and talking about the proper way to eat and talking about teaching our kids about their well-being, you know, about health and things of that nature. And I'm going to tell you, that's very important in our community.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it is. And
yeah.
I'm telling you, this was so much of a powerful show. I love it.
You know, and what I really like about it too, though, you're teaching them something they can use for the rest of their life. That's what's important to me. It's not a temporary fix. It's a lifetime fix. And
right.
If you learn it early, I know earlier before the show started, we were talking about this, a lot of times people want to get fit after they get sick or after something bad happens, you know, they have a health issue or someone around them they know had experience because of the weight. And everybody says, I'm going to get this weight off of me. It ain't going to happen to me. But why do we have to wait till something happens to make that change? So by teaching the kids early, they don't have to make the mistakes that we as older adults have made. They're going to start off right. Then they can teach the next generation, and then everybody can keep doing it. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's what makes it really important to me, is that it's a lifetime. It's not a temporary fix. It's not a Band-Aid. It is something they can use for the rest of their life to have a great life.
Right, exactly, exactly.
That's right. Well, anyway, we have 2 minutes and 30 seconds left on the show, so I'm asking Ms. J to start closing us out.
Oh, it went fast. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, James, for coming. I really appreciate it. I have to tell the audience, it is a great book. I'll have his information, so when it comes out, I think it's a great book that everyone should have in their household, in their children's libraries. It's really a great book. But, James, before we close out, if you had one positive thing to say to the audience as we leave this evening, what would that be?
The positive thing that I would leave with the audience and the parents, guardians, the grandmothers, as well as the children, is to know that you have value. That is one of the most important things that I can get through to people, is that you have value, you matter, you are not worthless, you have value. Like I mentioned earlier, the average human body is valued at $45 million. So you have value. We have a lot of our beautiful young ladies walking around thinking that they're worthless. We have our young men thinking that they're worthless. But you have value. And so once you realize what you're worth, you will take care of yourself. Because when you notice that you have something of value, you tend to protect it more than anything else. And so when you know that your body and you are valuable and that you are a rare jewel, because there's nobody else like you in the world, once you realize your value, you will protect yourself and everything around you. So the thing I want to leave with everyone is know your worth. You are valuable. You have a purpose. Don't let anybody lie to you and tell you that you're worthless, because you are not. You have value.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point. And Mr. John L. Brown.
Okay. James, thank you for coming on the show. And, man, I'm quite sure the audience got a lot of good, valuable information for you. And, again, thank you. And God bless you, man, and much, much success, okay? And back
Thanks,
to you,
thank
Mr.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the support, and we hope the information was a blessing to you, because we bring people like James on because We really believe, me and John really believe, that together we can make a difference. So we really thank you, and peace and blessings, and have a great evening. Good night, everybody.
Good night.